your weekly fix on finance and investing. This is the Cortland Economics Report.
Oh, welcome back. Continuing to listen to the first hour of the weekend edition. I hope everybody enjoyed the conversation I just had with Rick Bensinger. I have to say he has been pretty spot on in terms of the broad averages and how that recovery has gone on longer than most people have thought. But Rick has been on board with a lot of that recovery. In this segment, I am chatting with Adrian Day. He is the CEO of Adrian Day Asset Management. And Adrian, we will get into some of the resource companies that you like and that have been performing pretty well. But first, I want to follow up on that conversation I had with Rick, and that is the strength generally in the broad averages. The broad markets continue to do quite well. While they haven't quite reached all-time highs, we are seeing certain sectors perform quite well. One sector that you have outlined to us before with a couple stocks you've been looking at are dividend stocks. And quite frankly, when we have a market like we do right now with low and declining rates, dividend stocks benefit. Can you share some of your recent strategies in terms of the broad averages first?
Yeah, absolutely. And thank you for having me, Corey. Now, I'm sorry I haven't listened yet, obviously. By its nature, I haven't listened to the previous interview. So I'm not quite, you know, I hope I don't contradict or repeat something he said. But yeah, I think the main thing about the broad averages to remember is that the U.S. economy is still doing relatively well compared with the rest of the world. U.S. interest rates are still very attractive relative to the rest of the developed world. And so the U.S. remains, and the U.S. markets remain, a prime destination for global investors. Add to that, of course, there's no shortage of money around. The Fed has been printing money like crazy for the last, 11 years. And there's no shortage of money. So, you know, I'm a fundamentalist. I look at valuations. But we also have to remember other things like psychology and just, frankly, how much money is available to go into the market. And at the moment, there's no shortage. So, you know, we saw that big sell-off at the end of last year, primarily because of continued Fed tightening, so-called tightening. I put tightening in quotes. When the Fed this year repeatedly said that, you know, we're probably done with raising rates for the time being, Powell, the Fed chairman, said there has to be a reason for us to raise rates going forward. That tells us that the bias is towards easing. And I, like most people, I think, suspect that the next move in interest rates later this year will be down, not up. So, you know, so people obviously came back into the stock market. Now, you know, you mentioned there's obviously the whole market's doing well. You mentioned one sector in particular, the business development companies. These are companies that lend money to small businesses. I've been a big fan of this sector for a long time because, you know, the yields tend to be very attractive for retail investors. The stocks can be volatile, but if you're buying these stocks for the income and you have a long-term view, what I say to people is just ignore the volatility. You know, if you get 7 or 8%, and you get 7 or 8% on an annual basis for the next 10 or 15 years, it doesn't really matter whether the stock goes up or down or what in the meantime. Obviously, you need to look carefully at the individual companies. What are they investing in? You know, are they first lien, second lien, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. The most important thing for people to look at, I think, is the dividend covered by earnings, and the metrics that these companies use is net operating income. So is it covered by, we can call it earnings if you want, but is it covered by earnings or is it covered by net income, net investment income, rather? That's the important thing. You don't want a company that's paying a dividend out of capital because they'll have to cut it at some point. But, you know, I mentioned when we were chatting earlier, one of my favorites is a company called Glasson Investment. And, you know, I mentioned how these stocks have done very well recently. This was trading under $9 at the end of the year, now trading $12.30, basically. So it's had a really good run this year. It was obviously the whole sector was particularly depressed at the end of last year on the tightening, because as interest rates move up, companies that are basically dividend payers and that people buy for the dividend obviously become less attractive, just like bonds go down when interest rates go up. Now that interest rates have stabilized and look as though they might be heading down, people have come back into this sector. So it all makes logical sense. But I mentioned the big run in the stock. It's now selling at the high price since 2008. So a lot of investors might say, well, yeah, I'm not sure I want to look at that. I want to buy that at this point. And you know me well enough, Curry, to know that I don't like chasing stock prices. So we miss out on quite a lot because we don't chase stock prices. But you look at this company, it's yielding well over 7%. And that's covered by their net income that they earn on both the loans that they make and also on equity kickers that they get. So if you can get 7.5% on a solid company where the dividend, has increased, it will increase, they've already announced it in June of this year, and then in September of last year, and then in March of last year. So you can see that the dividend, not only is it covered by income, but it has consistently and repeatedly increased. I mean, as they say, what's not to like? If you want income, what's wrong with buying this now, knowing that in a market sell-off, the stock might come down a bit, but the dividend will still be paid? And very quickly, another one, if I may, is Ares Capital. I mean, Ares, which is the largest of these BDCs, it's about a $6 billion market cap, $7 billion market cap. But their dividend is an astonishing 9.1%, fully covered by net income. And they also have just increased the dividend twice last year. And they've also paid additional special cash dividends. These are dividends that have already been announced but haven't been paid yet. So this year, they will be paying an extra 8 cents in four different dividends. On a company that has a 39-cent quarterly dividend, an extra 8 cents is meaningful. So we're looking at a better than 9% dividend yield. Again, if you're looking for income, that's tough to beat. Sorry, Corey, I answered that rather more extensively than you probably expected.
You know what, Adrian? You did outline a couple companies there that are showing a nice dividend. Plus, their stocks are also moving, so you do get that potential of capital gains. What I think this is telling a broader story, though, is of where investors are starting to look. In all fairness, when we had the markets running a couple years ago, it was in all these high-flying names. People were simply riding these much riskier stocks because, you know what, there's a lot of momentum players out there. But there has been this general shift that we've seen of investors moving more into either income or almost safer type of investments, not looking so much just for that capital gains aspect. Can you maybe discuss what this means in terms of overall market makeup and the importance of the shift that we have seen here?
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. And I mean, a lot of that, of course, is because now people have the memory of the last quarter of last year, which was pretty painful for a lot of investors, particularly if they were a margin in some of these high flyers. And yeah, there's definitely a shift. And I think in this sort of leg, if you like, of a bull market, we're much more likely to see more differentiation between various stocks or among various stocks. And part of it is the more risky high flyers versus income. But I think some of it is just going to be which particular sectors or even individual stocks are doing well. And, in the earnings season that's coming up, I suspect I suspect some companies that underperform are going to be hit very hard. One of the things that's true in the broad market as well as in the resource sector, we were talking about the resources earlier, but it's also true in the broad sector. I think the market is no longer shrugging off bad news. When you have bad news, whatever it is, whether it's earnings or the jury cases in Roundup or, you know, Elon Musk criticizing the SEC again, although I'm kind of conflicted on that because I think Tesla is a great short, but I also like it anytime anybody sticks it to the SEC. But that's a different issue. You know, but anytime there's bad news, the stocks are actually responding quite sharply, as opposed to, say, a year ago when bad news was largely just ignored. And we've seen that, as I say, with three different types of bad news that I've mentioned, but each one hit the stock involved very heavily. More heavily than perhaps the fundamentals would dictate. And so I think that suggests that investors are being more selective, and they're being, although they're buying stocks, they're being much more risk averse than they were a year ago.
All right, some interesting comments there, Adrian. But now let's also switch over to the resource sector. It's why one of the reasons why I read your newsletter. And I have to say that we have seen a selective recovery in some of these stocks. And some of the stocks that you and I were chatting about off mic, they range anywhere from royalty companies to producers or near-term producers to exploration companies. What do you think investors need to be most aware of when looking at different resource companies and trying to figure out whether to invest? Because they do see some stocks bucking the trend, but in a broad sense, there's a lot of stocks still lagging.
Definitely, a lot of stocks are lagging. I think overall, there has been some green sprouts, as they say. There have been some signs of strength in some of these markets as bids coming in. But again, and I'll get to your question in a second if I may, but again, any bad news, the stocks are being punished very, very hard. And we've seen that with several stocks recently. Mandora would be a good example, where they had disappointing results from their joint venture with Freeport, and the stock, you know, has tumbled 50%, basically. So we've seen this, and I think we're going to continue to see this. There'd be very few high flyers, on the other hand. It's just a matter of overall strength across the board, but not very few that have been, you know, exceptional performers. But I think a couple of things. To me, number one, you know, it comes down to, well, two things, really. One is the people and one is the balance sheet. Both of those are just absolutely, absolutely critical, in my view, with juniors. And, you know, we talked earlier, you mentioned, you know, the number of companies that have raised money this year, although some of them kind of struggled to close, and that's absolutely true. I mean, I think in February and March, we did more private placements in such a short period of time than I've ever done, you know, in the last 30 years. There were a lot of them and a lot of good ones, good companies. But as we did one and then another and then another, we sort of started to run out of money. And I think that's happening with the whole market. So not only did some individual companies that perhaps weren't so attractive have difficulties raising money, but equally just there's just so much of it for the whole sector to absorb. And the person who's putting $100,000 into a private placement is probably not putting that $100,000 into other companies in the market. And so the number of private placements that have, you know, money that's been raised, including the flow-throughs in Canada, has removed some liquidity from other stocks, from publicly traded stocks. But, you know, the good companies have still been able to raise money on reasonable terms. I don't know if you saw the Orion one. They did a financing and closed it very successfully, and there's been several of those. But I think companies that did not raise money in the early part of the year and are still going to need to raise money over the next 6 months, they could maybe have a little bit more difficulty unless they have something very significant going on. So anyway, the main thing to me is balance sheet. Do they have the capital to execute their plans for the next, you know, year or two? And equally, are they putting a reasonable percentage of their money into the ground or into their activities rather than into G&A? because companies that are putting 75% of their money into G&A over the last several years, they're going to have a more difficult time raising money going forward. I think more and more people are scrutinizing these things a little more carefully than they ever have in the past, which is a good thing.
Yeah, as well they should be. That's something you Absolutely. And I have talked about too, is the fact that you do need to watch very closely where money is being spent. But you also bring up a good point about that little financing window that we've seen in the last about 3 to 4 months, where companies have been able to raise some money. Obviously, not every company has been able to raise the money, but we have seen some oversubscribed private placements. Something to consider is that does also lock up those funds for 4 months, and that takes that money away from buying in the public, in the open market. So that could be a sign of maybe a bit of a slower time coming for the broad number of stocks. Adrian, can you share some of the stocks that are catching your eye right now that maybe our listeners can look into, please?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, one right now to look at would be Midland. It's the exploration company focused in Quebec. MD is the symbol. I've mentioned it before in the show, I'm sure. I should mention our firm, our clients own, I'm not quite sure, but it's over 15% anyway. So we're a big shareholder of Midland. I've mentioned it. I followed it for a long, 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 long time. They follow the prospect generator joint venture model, primarily in Quebec, very well financed. They've got about $12 million in cash at the moment. But they have just started exploring a property that they discovered last September, October through grab samples. And they didn't have time before winter to do any more serious work. So it was just grab samples, but the grab samples were extremely attractive. Now they've done geophysics, they've done soil testing, and now they've just started drilling. Drill program is underway. Now, I mean, obviously the truth machine will tell us whether this property, which is called Murthrill, up in James Bay, that will tell us whether, there's something there or not. But certainly the geophysics have looked very attractive, and the soil anomalies have been very attractive. We know that these things don't always work out. We saw what happened with Evram and his Qualy property, where they had extremely disappointing results that nobody was really expecting. So these things can go bad. I think the good thing, I would say about Midland is at $1.25, you're really not paying a lot. You're really not paying a lot for this particular property. If they have a discovery here, the stock, is easily a $2 stock in my mind. So you're not overpaying for it. And in the meantime, you've got good people, good balance sheet, lots of other projects, etc. So that's one that I like, and we've been buying that one, I should say. We own a lot, but we've also been buying the last few days. And since I mentioned Evram, maybe I should just say everything I said about Midland in terms of quality of the people, strong balance sheet, lots of other properties and activities is true of Evram. Evram, when they had the disappointing results at Qualy, it just really fell much further than it should have done. And so what you've got at the moment is a company selling for $25 million, $25 million, with about 11.5 million probably now in cash. Plus, they have a 2% royalty on a property called Ermitaño, which is right next door to First Majestic Santa Elena project. Santa Elena is running out of ore. The property was sold to First Majestic. First Majestic is drilling that property very aggressively because they want the ore. They just announced an update to their maiden resource estimate. Resources are up 20% in the last year. I think you're going to see them start producing that as soon as they possibly can, because they need it. They've got a facility there. And anyway, from the point of view of Evram, that's a royalty that could be sold anytime they want. Right? Royalties are very, very attractive in this market. So they could pick up the phone, make four phone calls, and have it sold. How much would they get? I don't know. But I can tell you this much, that 25 million market cap and 12 million of cash, they would get at least 13 million, which means that these two assets alone are the market cap of the company. So everything else they have, regional alliance with Newmont, very innovative project with Yamana. They're going through Yamana's old database, and they have the right to present projects to Yamana for a joint venture, and if Yamana doesn't want them, they can keep them. That's a very, very attractive kind of deal. So there's lots going on with Evrim. Very, very cheap at 30 cents. Very cheap. Metalla is one we've talked about before. It's obviously doing very well, but Metalla is a royalty company, junior royalty company. It's only been around about 2.5 years. Brett Heath, the CEO and the founder of the company and the CEO, has done, in my view, an amazing job building a company, a solid company, so quickly. They recently issued a $12 million convertible loan, and at the same time, or the same day, they announced that they had purchased a package of 18 royalties from Alamos. They bought these in shares of the company, which means that the convertible they raised is obviously for something else. This is a company that has half a dozen producing. By the end of the year, they'll have half a dozen producing royalties, mostly in silver, but increasingly some of the Alamos ones are gold. They have a strong balance sheet, $12 million they just raised. And interestingly, for a junior, they pay a dividend. The dividend right now is about 1.4%. So for the gold space, that's a high. That's on the high end of dividend yields, as you probably know, for the gold space. It's very unusual for a junior to pay a dividend. I have to say that I told Brett I was against them paying a dividend because I thought it was better for them to preserve their cash for deals because it's a growing company. But his point, which I fully understand, is that paying a dividend tells the market that the cash flow is sustainable, that it's not a one-off, that this is, that the company has grown to the point where they can justify a dividend and that they believe that dividend payment is sustainable. So, Metalla, it's had a good run, if you follow it, 80 cents at the beginning of the year, $1.32 today, had a good run on the back of not just the news I mentioned, but on a couple of other items of good news. I think this is one that, we just hold it and we hold what we own. With new clients, we buy it, and we're just holding on to it. I think in 3 to 5 years, this will be a $5 stock. It'll be bought by one of the other royalty companies. In my view, that's the sort of end game. Someone else will buy it. But in the meantime, you're getting a dividend. Very, very well-run company. So I can't say enough about the way they run this company.
Okay. Well, Adrian, that gives our listeners at least a little bit of companies or a couple companies to look into. And you know what? I have had Brett on the show a couple times to explain the Metalla royalty strategy. And so far, they're executing on that very nicely, as you have outlined. Adrian, it's great to have you on the show. Thank you for sharing your thoughts on the broad averages as well as diving down into some of those resource companies that you like. If anybody wants more information on Adrian and Adrian Day Asset Management, feel free to email me, fleck@kereport.com. In the meantime, Adrian, have a great rest of your weekend.
Well, and you, and thank you very much for having me, Corey.
To find out more about today's guests, visit us on the web at www.kereport.com. You're listening to the Corlin Economics Report. We'll be back in a moment.